Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, November 13th. My name is Michael Kelly and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Glad to be here.
Welcome to those joining us live as well as those listening to the archives. The Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. Now, as always, we are going to begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, and one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. And tonight's topic is a big one. It's understanding the process of death. Kind of a heavy subject, but it's something that every single living thing will have to deal with, both our own and those close to us. And Dr. Hunter, I think you...
Take the lead?
Yeah, you have a certain expertise in this regard.
I had gone out to have a part-time job working at a funeral home. And it's been a real eye-opener. I learned so much, you know, aside from all the paperwork involved. Oh, my. But the people, and I want to say it's been a real privilege to work there this year. I've since moved on to other things. But it's a topic that until you're actually, you know, back against the wall, don't consider to talk about much. And I know there's a lot of people who do try to educate, but, you know, it's a tough one. And like you said, Michael, probably one of the toughest things that, you know, we can have a discussion about. But I'd like to take it more from another kind of perspective first. And the first thing is that we're human beings and, you know, we live in an organic body. But in our view, my view, is that we're spirit joined with that body. And that's something that never, it doesn't die. I absolutely believe that. But again, everyone has their own perspective of that. If we're looking at life and death from a purely organic, emotional perspective, it's a tough call. If you have a belief system or something that, you know, you kind of can work through from a different level, it's more palatable, I think. But so it's really in the perspective. So I'd like to first of all say that, as Dr. Kelly would say, we live on a planet that everything eats everything. It's just a matter of transforming organic energy, one thing into another. That's a given. So it's not a matter of if we're going to die, it's when. And I know that's tough one too. But we live in a lot of societies now that, you know, try to cheat death, or, you know, that fountain of youth, or, you know, people want to go into cryo states and come back when there's a, you know, a cure for their ailment. So there's just always this battle against it. And I think that that is from an emotional perspective, but also I believe that the will of spirit, our will to be here, our will to survive, our will to continue going is a great contributor to that. So, you know, I just wanted to get that off the top before we start to get into any other parts of the discussion. Michael, anything at this point?
Well, I think you're absolutely right that having a belief system in place does help the navigation of, you know, thinking about these topics. Sometimes even if that belief system is an absence, but it's that certainty that kind of gives you some kind of comfort when you think about the topic itself. But, you know, one thing I was wondering, why is this topic so heavy? Why is it such a difficult thing to talk about? You know, where does that come from?
Well, I think it's fueled by, you know, our culture that really does everything it can to, you know, like cheat death. I think that's part of it. But I think it's the fear of loss. Dr. Angie said in the chat, it's grief. You know, I think that we don't like pain, you know, and we do everything we can to avoid, whether that's emotional pain, physical pain, you know, anything we can to avoid it. And I can't tell you the numbers of people I have known in my life who say, oh, I just can't talk about that. I just can't talk about it. Sends me where, you know. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, I mean, it is, you know, universal. It's easy to understand. It's something that we don't really have control over. And there's a huge unknown factor to it. You know, different people have different levels of faith in their belief and what the afterlife will actually be. But you're absolutely right when you say that everything that exists today eons ago existed in some other state. It was the same matter, the same energy. The energy does not die. There is no energy created or destroyed. It's all repurposed and recycled, and it creates new things. And the life that is us becomes something else that is living in a very literal, scientific way. Mm-hmm. And then we can expound upon that in a more metaphysical and a more spiritual way as well, in terms of what is consciousness. And that is the essence of metaphysics. Yep. But, you know, I understand why it's so heavy, but it's worth asking the question, why should it be? This is a part of our natural existence. This is a part of what it means to be human, to be alive, no matter what you are, no matter plant or animal. We all have our cycle, mm-hmm. and we need to understand that. And I think this is a great topic, and I'm so happy, Dr. Hunter, that you thought of this, because it's something that needs to be discussed.
Well, it sure does. I know Dr. Angie just added in there, it's been 11 years since her mom passed, and she can barely speak about it without getting choked up. And when we're sharing our lives here, people fill a space in us. And I think it's an emotional space, a mental space, not just a physical space. So we have someone who fills our space, and we interact with that energy. So I know some people are a little more impactful than others. When I think about my brother, he's been gone now over 30 years. To me, there's no time and space. It's like it happened yesterday, because he filled such an enormous amount of space, you know, within my existence, within my identity. So that's that space. And when that space is suddenly emptied on the physical, again, that physical level, then we have this emptiness, you know, this, oh my, you know, what do I do? And it's not a matter of, oh, I'm going to just go fill that space up. No, it's transforming our perception of that space. And for me, It was to experience, and I did experience my brother on another level. It still really peed me off a lot of the times that I couldn't call him up on the phone and say, "Hey, let's have coffee," you know. And so there was that physical space that was empty. And but I tell you, for many years, driving in my car and randomly start crying, and I didn't know why. What's the date? And it would be on that exact anniversary of his, you know, of his death, which is coming up actually in these next few days, where I'd say, oh, so there's this cellular memory, you see? So even though I wasn't thinking about it, my body was remembering it. So there's so many different ways where people share our space. Go ahead, Michael.
I really love the way that you put that, because, you know, we form bonds with people. We become entangled with them on a certain level. And when they are gone, a piece of us is gone with them. But then a piece of them remains with us always.
Yeah.
And I remember the biggest, I mean, I've had death in my life of friends and family. Obviously the biggest event was when my mother died, when I was an older teenager, I was 18, you know, so there are people that have lost their parents much younger than that. And I'd been, you know, mostly grown, but it was a significant event in that in my life there was everything that I was prior to that and then everything I was after. Mm-hmm. That was a watermark moment that shaped everything that came after it.
Exactly.
And
that's a great way to say it, Michael. It's true.
Thanks. Yeah. It's strange though. With me, it almost at this point, it feels like a different life. It was a lifetime ago. I was 18. It's been 15 years. And in another 10 years, a little better than 10 years, I will have lived longer than my mom ever did. And that's an odd thing to think about.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you know, sometimes it just hits me. The reality of it hits me. And in an emotional way, you know, more so than the intellectual understanding that we all have, it hits you in an emotional level. And I feel it. And it can be brought about by random things. Sometimes just things that remind me of her. Or recently seeing a picture of my aunt on social media reminded me how much she looked like my mother, and I hadn't seen a picture of my mother in a little while. They're in my storage right now while I'm kind of transitioning, but it comes in those random moments, and anniversaries never did stick with me. You know, it occurs to me that it's past, or that it's the day, or sometimes I don't remember the day of and it'll occur to me later, but I don't know, it just never felt that the date was important in my looking back on it anyway, as much as just events that made me think of her throughout the years. That's a strange thing.
Every relationship is what I call uniquely fingerprinted in the universe. So no two relationships are the same. No two experiences are the same. It's fingerprinted. You know, it's so unique. And everyone who experiences loss and thereafter, it will be very unique. I know there's a lot of death and dying and grief counseling and such, but you can't, you know, and people can share if that makes you feel better, but you'll never get an outside validation or an outside comfort, because yours is your own unique experience. You know, and what you said, Michael, about who I was before and who I was after were different. And it's getting to know ourselves in different ways. And I know there's a little bit of chatter in the chat room, you know, people sharing some of their experiences. But and a lot of it is about, and I'm glad to share, you know, your experience so we can connect with one another. But there'll never be a validation. I don't know how to explain that in any other way, except my pain is my pain. Yeah. My experience is my experience. The one thing that I have seen a lot of in my lifetime, not just, you know, in, working in a funeral home, is how people often compete for pain, but really what they're doing is looking for that unique kind of acknowledgement of, yes, you were special to that individual. Mm-hmm. But you can't hear it enough times, even if that happens. You see? Well, and it's interesting.
Yeah, because it comes to the esteem in their psychology to a degree, too. And, you know, I think a degree of attention, you know, is desired sometimes. But, I don't know. It's, you know, when you said that everybody's pain is unique, you're absolutely right. And everybody's pain is their own. And, you know, I remember thinking when she passed that, well, I didn't really think about it in these terms, but I didn't want or need, or it didn't occur to me, nobody needed to validate my pain. It was mine. It was my experience in this life. It was something that taught me about what life was, you know. It was a teacher to me. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say that someone shared in the chat that losing two sons in infancy, I don't think there's anything worse that I've ever witnessed. And I hope I never want to experience it. But there, again, there's somehow we can accept that there's the chain of command, if you will. There's this chain of events. Like if we are going to experience loss, it will be those above us. In other words, older than us. And, you know, but when we have someone who is lost in their youth, it's like, I can't imagine. It's difficult because we have no brain file for that. You know, we don't have some kind of natural process that says, oh, that's acceptable or that's understandable. It's just not. And there's no way to ever tell anybody, oh, I get it, because that's just not true. And even though, you know, get in a support group, everybody's going to have that unique feeling, that unique experience. And I could say to someone, I'm very sorry for your loss. And I truly mean that. That acknowledgement, I know, is often appreciated. When I've heard it, I have appreciated it. Because that means to me someone's not afraid of it. Yeah. Now, that's... This is the other thing I want to bring up before we get into some other, you know, harder topics, but is very often when I've seen it again so many times, someone experiences a loss and nobody wants to talk to that individual because it's fearful. Well, I don't know what to say. Well, you know, I don't know what to do. And compassion tells us to ask if you don't know, but to never fear it. And certainly the one thing that people need the most of when they are experiencing a loss is to at least say, I'm here for you. You know, I heard about your experience. I'm very sorry to hear that. But I'm here for you. You know, I have a friend of mine who lost her son a few years ago when she called. And I was the only friend who stuck with her. I was surprised, and she was grieving the loss of her friends as well as the loss of her son. And it just wrenched my heart for her that I didn't get that. This is when we, you know, step up to be a support and friends. Do I know what to do? Absolutely not. I don't have the foggiest idea except, you know, to listen and to talk and remember if it's warranted, you know, just to be there. I don't think I'm any genius here to say, oh, I know what to do with this. No, I don't. So part of the process and understanding the dying process is that we're the ones still living and we're the ones in the sharing space to support one another, to be there with one another. And, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's like we're among the living here. We're human beings. We're organic beings. And while we are in this journey together, part of this is, you know, to face the dying part. because it's going to happen. It will happen.
Well, and you know, it's as they say, you know, the funerals aren't for the dead; they're for the living, and they're there so that we can be there for each other. We are a species. We're an animal. We're a soul that needs to be with other people. We form bonds. We form connections. They are our strength. Other people in this world, they bring us strength. And when things of such tragedy occur, I hope that everybody in those moments has somebody that they can look to for strength and that can be there to help them in those moments, because not everybody does, and I really feel for those, and I'm very lucky myself that I had family and friends that were there to support me, and and it's a support network that's important to being able to get through that grief a lot of times.
But well, go ahead, Michael.
But it's about remembering the people that are alive too, and remembering to cherish life as well.
Well, you know, if I can just mention another discussion in the chat, thanks for this one, Dr. Angie, about a friend of hers whose son was murdered. I mean, she said nobody talked to her, but she had to work, couldn't stop crying, you know, and she went and helped her out. And there are some things we can't get in our brains, like when someone else has taken another life and trying to make sense of it and how did this happen and why, we can't. You know, we can grab onto little, you know, straws here and there to try to get us through the shock and trauma, but no one will ever be able to give you an answer why these things happen. I mean, we live in a pretty convoluted planet these days, and there's, you know, we're intersecting with all kinds of energy, and there's just, we're not going to have a valid explanation for why a lot of things happen. Yeah. And it's a matter of, again, that support and lifeline, literally, for those who experience these traumas.
Look back in history and I wonder, is there ever a time where we weren't going through a chaotic mix of energies and conflicting, you know... Basically, no. it's been kind of a chaotic storm throughout, but all throughout human history, you know, we've had, there's been a lot of pain, but there's been a lot of happiness too, and that's coming together and supporting each other is where we find those moments of happiness, where we find the brighter side of life, and to remember that death is a part of life. It's inevitable. Shouldn't be ever to those so young, but it is a part of our natural course of life, and we need to appreciate that. And in its context, that new life is always also coming into the world, part of that cycle, that every moment there's a new baby being born, there's a new creature being born into this world, into existence, that will live its life, that has untold potential ahead of it. These things are true just as one day we will all pass from this world into the next is also true. We look at it in its entirety.
Well, I think that if there's one thing that has changed in the times that we live in, and here's a news flash for everybody, the average lifespan, generally speaking, in our societies, westernized societies, was, you know, 50, 60 years old. And now we've gone up to 70-something, 80-something, and it's not unheard of. You know, that's not to say certain, you know, genetics and families didn't live to be old. I'm just saying the average lifespan. We've extended the average lifespan due to medication. And so, I mean, I often say that there's a club, you know, if you faced your mortality, then you get that rude awakening, you belong to a club. But I'd like to also suggest to people that if you've even taken antibiotics, you're in the club. You know, even if you've gone to the doctor and had some, what we now see is really, who cares, you know, shrug it off, that kind of treatment and all is well, mm-hmm. You know, that we have, as I say, lived beyond our best-before date. So there would be, the old Vikings would say that the date of death, birth and death is marked, and they live it fiercely.
Yeah.
Well, it's not marked that way anymore in the event there's truth to what the Vikings believed. But, you know what I'm saying? It's like we have taken for granted a lot of things now that we're given, and medicine and science can do amazing things now, just amazing things to extend our lifespans. But we have all faced mortality, our own mortality, even in the smallest things. We just didn't see it that way.
Oh, yeah.
So that's perception.
And, you know, I have to say that I had very bad pneumonia when I was a boy. I probably would have died without antibiotics and modern medicine. I've had asthma since, you know, off and on in severity. But depending on what era I would have lived in, it would have been very unlikely that I would have been able to survive.
Exactly.
And it's something that we live in the era that we do, because we also have to understand our existence in the full context of what an average human being had to experience as recent as 100 years ago and further back. And the further back you go, a lot of times it can be, you know, very short and very brutal lives. And we need to appreciate what we have in context for that, because if we don't appreciate it, it, in a way, to me, denigrates what our ancestors did to get us to where we are. People did sacrifice and live hard lives so that we could have the lives that we have, and we build upon that and continue it for our future generations. Mm-hmm. But another interesting thing, you're talking about life expectancy kind of going from the, you know, 60s into the 70s and 80s. I remember reading several articles not that long ago. It's been kind of making the rounds in the popularity science circuit about older humans prior to agriculture and cities. Infant mortality was much higher, but basically if you survive childhood, you on average would live into your 70s quite often, and that would be the norm. It was brutal to get there in the terms of, you know, it was only the children that had the immunities, had the right mix of antibodies for that environment, had the right mix of attributes. But after they reached adulthood, they on average would live into their 70s and sometimes later. But the wonderful things we've been able to do with medicine is to bring opportunity to those people that wouldn't have otherwise made it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, perhaps the world is a much better place for the gifts that people have been able to bring to the world that wouldn't have been able to otherwise.
Yeah. Can't disagree with that, Michael. Not a bit. Yeah. You know, if we now too, because I, you know, boy, we can talk, can't we? We're moving on here a little bit. What I want to share with people, the laws in every, I'm in Canada, even in Canada, the laws province to province vary. There are federal laws when it comes to when somebody is passed, but each province will have its own manner of doing things. So the U.S. is much the same. Other countries, it just depends. So a lot of things when it comes to when you've lost somebody, what the steps are is going to be different depending on where you live and what resources there are. And I'll explain that in a second. But very often when I would get a phone call and somebody would say, you know, my mother's just passed, what do I do? Well, here, we would be able to just call the hospital. But generally, hospitals require a release form for the body to be released. That's what they mean, is that then the funeral home would bring that body into their care. And, you know, we would transfer it and bring it into our care and then go through the process of sitting down with the family and talking about what they would like to do. And by that, I mean cremation or a burial. Really interesting that statistically about 80% now are cremations rather than burials. huge reason for that, honestly, is the finances. And it's been encouraged due to space. And I don't mean to sound really, you know, crude about this, but plots of land are really expensive. A plot in a funeral, like in a cemetery, is a lot of money. The caskets are a lot of money. So there's a lot of money involved in this, and it's a business, trust me, everybody, which I'm going to explain a little bit in a sec. So basically, we sit down, there are documents to be signed, there has to be a registration, you need information such as a birth certificate, social insurance number, and your own as well as the deceased. In Canada, you can apply for a death benefit to help cover some of the costs. It takes weeks to get that money. A lot of funeral homes won't even proceed until they get paid. And this is why a lot of cremations or burials now take longer than 2 or 3, 4 days, 5 days, as it used to, because people are gathering finances and some kind of resource to those finances. So it has to be some amount of patience. If there's been a coroner or a medical examiner has ordered an autopsy, it's really up to them and their scheduling and when the release can be made of the deceased and how you can proceed from there. Funeral homes, there's many different ways, like I say, this is a business. Thankfully, I didn't work for that kind of an organization, but it's a business that really does prey on people's emotions. And I know my son-in-law recently lost his grandmother, and so my son-in-law's parents were really upset because the funeral home, the only one where they live, and it's a small town-wide area, they insisted on, we're going to have cremation, but they insisted on having a pillow under her head. They offer these package deals, you see. And they said, well, we don't want that. We don't need that. No, it's part of our package. So, you know, they didn't have a choice. They have since now, for the other grandparent that is imminent, what we call imminent, meaning they're ill and going to pass, then they have looked at other resources in another neighboring town, which then tailors to the needs. So it's that very basic provisions given and not with these so-called packages with all these extras in it, because it's a huge amount of money, thousands of dollars. And I kid you not, it's huge money. So it's... I know there's just a comment here about embalming. People sometimes want to view the deceased. Fair enough. That's totally it. A lot of reasons you might want to do that. It's closure. It's the acceptance of it. Seeing is believing. Totally acceptable. After a number of days, it's wise to have someone embalmed, and that just is the preservation of the body over, because there's deteriorations. The embalming costs money. So that, I'm just telling you the things that you're going to face in that. The refrigeration units, and I know this, again, depending on the country you're in, because a lot of countries don't have refrigeration. So this process is sped up a lot. And people kind of have to come together because it still costs money. Everything costs money. And that's the hard side of this topic. So, again, but there's the refrigeration, but that'll only do it for a certain amount of time. Unfortunately, I have been witness to cases where someone has passed and there's been nobody to claim that individual. The hospital, the social workers, other people do their best to try to track down family. After generally 3 weeks, then they start a process on their own. And yes, they keep the body for as long as they can and as long as it takes to do the paperwork. And it can be kept for many weeks. It it's not an ideal condition, I assure you, but it does happen that way. The other thing that I think is important for people to know about is there are educators about the funeral process. 99.9% of the time, those people are going to be individuals selling insurance policies. So if you want to prepay for your own funeral, the funeral homes are not, they don't keep your money. It goes to an insurance company. So there used to be a process where funeral homes would hold money in trust, and they stopped doing that. It now goes to an insurance company, separate from your life insurance policy, by the way. It's specific to your funeral in the event of when you die. There are hard costs that can be firmed up, but then there's other costs that aren't. So it could be more in 10 years than what you paid into. But whoever is educating you, and really good people out there, don't get me wrong, but they get a commission on you signing up for those insurance policies. Are they good to have? I guess, sure. If you don't have anybody else, if you feel you don't want to burden your family, but it's really important then to notify this policy and change the funeral home association if you're moving. Because a lot of these policies get lost because the family doesn't know there's a policy. So those are little things to know about that make sure that the identification is lined up and that you have that information. And then a funeral home will take you through the steps of what you need to do. Any questions at this point, Michael, do you think, or are you seeing?
Not that I've seen in the chat. We've had some great stories that have been shared. I can say that I've had to deal with death a lot in my profession, working in office manager and finance and what have you. So we deal with people and we deal closely with them. And honestly, I've been surprised at some of the bonds I've formed with clients that I've had over the years. And it's always a hard time when one of them passes and you know it's coming, and it's happened even recently. And it creates, depending on how things go, it creates, you know, kind of a pain, especially if things aren't done in an organized fashion. To what you were saying earlier, it's something to think about, making sure that everything's in order, that if you do have, like you had said, if you do have an insurance policy, make sure it's up to date with what funeral arrangements you want, the funeral home that you want, and more importantly, make sure that your executor, who's going to be there to take care of this, knows about it and knows where it is and how to deal with it. A lot of what I've had to deal with people is organizing their estate to make sure that, you know, in the event that something happens, when it happens, that it's done in the best possible way, that it's the best for the family. Because there's a lot of things to think about.
Well, and I might suggest that a safe deposit box is not exactly the ideal spot for your will. Because you can't get into the safe deposit box without a death certificate, and you can't get a death certificate until the funeral home processes it. And so that's kind of messy. So make sure you have a copy. If you have a will, make sure you give a copy to your executor or leave it handy somewhere. Now, I want to get just another point across, Michael, that a power of attorney does not necessarily mean you're also executor.
No.
And there are two different things. One is before and one is after. So
put out some legal disclaimers or something. That we cannot offer legal advice in this capacity. No. But you're absolutely right. They're not the same thing. A power of attorney becomes null and void once somebody passes.
Yes. So it's and if there is no will, generally whoever is willing to pay for the expenses, a next of kin automatically steps up. So I would say that half of the people have a will. that I have in my experience. And as long as somebody steps up and pays for it, then and they're next of kin and willing to take responsibility, then you know, that is generally acceptable.
Well, I think there's, I mean, honestly, in many ways, not that this is my sole, the sole part of my profession, but a big part of it is, you know, managing these kinds of affairs. And the one of the big and important things is that, well, at least in United States law, it varies state by state. So just be educated about your local laws and guidelines. And a will is not going to avoid probate. A will is going to be a blueprint for the judge to assign who gets what.
Yeah.
So realize that you'll have to go through court. Depending on the state, you may have legal fees. There's a lot to consider. So realizing that all of our lives come full circle, this is sometimes a difficult thing for people to think about. And death is heavy. It's a rough thing to think about. A lot of people want to avoid those things. But I can speak from firsthand experience that it's worthwhile to plan ahead.
But, yeah, there's been a few comments supporting you in that, Michael. So you know, made in here, and I know someone has just said they want to do it, they want to arrange their own stuff, but they don't want to do it. You know, and again, it's because it's such a hard topic.
It is.
So here's what I want to get across, though: it's not a matter of if you die; it's when you die, and when we understand, really get that. You know, I am going to leave the earth one day. We can appreciate living. I mean, that's what it's about, is living. We all have challenges. We all have stuff we don't like to deal with. And it's hard. Some days are really hard. But I always say, well, I'm really kind of curious about how all this plays out, you know. And I'll stay as long as I can. And as, you know, as long as everything sets up okay, then I'm sticking around. But it's a hard thing to say in some ways, but other ways is no. And I guess, Michael, I got to say, I think I have a bit of an advantage in a way. And I'm sure there's some listeners who can appreciate this. I had an out-of-body experience when I drowned at age 5. And I fear not death at all. It's energy transformed in my view, in my experience, and that's what I stick to. That may not be what somebody else, and I really want to be respectful about how other people view, you know, in life and death and their beliefs. But for me, it's just another realm of existence. But I'm just so darn curious about how this little play is going to all act itself out.
Well, that's the interesting thing. You know, we are all going to pass, and I'd like to think that I have, I don't know, 100, 120 years left. I'm really counting on science to string me along there at the end. We'll go with cybernetics, whatever it takes, the singularity, we'll figure it out. But it's important to remember the balance, that death is one side of the balance of life, of the cycle of life that we have. We have the bitters on one side. We have the, you know, Brussels sprouts and the nasty, nasty stuff. But on the other side, we have the sweet stuff. We have the sugary treats. We have the carbohydrates, the, you know, croissants and what have you. So remember that life is big. Life is full. Life is varied.
Yeah.
And this is one part of life, but it is not the entirety of life.
You know, Michael, I think we've got time for a couple of really quick cards, do you think?
Absolutely.
Anybody want a card pulled tonight out of our inner oracle self-discovery cards? I know we've gone from one, you know, kind of been all over in this topic. We're trying to be delicate, but it's time to shift along now and see what we've got going. Michael, would you draw a card for me, please? That would be great.
I'd be happy to. And you get trust integrity.
Oh, I like it, though.
Sure. Sounded unsure at first. Or did it have a special meaning?
No, go ahead.
All right. Trust integrity. Integrity means being true to oneself intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Trusting myself. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Michael. Do you want to pick one for Dr. Edward? And I'll have Wendy's card ready here.
Well, I am always happy to pull a card for Dr. Edward. And today, I want to see if we're going to have another repeat. Let's see. We have number 23, meaning and purpose. The meaning of life is built upon values and beliefs and remains constant. The purpose of life is the action plan for your meaning of life. The purpose can change. A sense of purpose always evolves. The question is not, what is the purpose of life? Rather, the question is, what is the purpose of my life? True fulfillment comes when embracing your heart's desire with both meaning and a renewed sense of purpose to fulfill that meaning. This card can also relate to the meaning or purpose of a specific situation or lack thereof.
I like it. It's good. For Dr. Edward. So he just wrote, I like that too. So good one. You know, Wendy, I did intend to pick one card for you, but two came out. So I'm going to give them to you in order. So number 11, awareness, is the first card. Every human being has a responsibility to increase their awareness for fulfillment and peaceful coexistence. People generally do the best they can to their current level of awareness, knowledge, experience, and resources. This card may indicate that an increased awareness in some area is needed. Continue to increase your awareness of self and others through observation, acquired knowledge, and a positive attitude. Da-da-da-da. This is why I say that little drum roll, please. The supporting energy to that, Wendy, is number 9 in the wild card suit, blank. It's my fave. It's my absolute favorite. Drawing this card puts you on notice to dig deep within for the answers you seek. This card is what you want it to be. It's what you need it to be. It's all that you desire it to be. Remember that the unconscious mind speaks to you in the quietest of voices, in the loudest of ways often overlooked. The universe is always on your side. Dig deep, for your answers lay within. Ooh, yeah, she says, I like blank. I do too. Well, I get shivers, you know. It's exciting. So awareness and the blank card together is, I think, I get, thanks, Wendy, she said, good cards. I think something is afoot, a mystery maybe. I think that my sense of that is you're about to turn a little page, a consciousness opening, something new is beginning for you. That's, see, spidey senses, as Dr. Kelly would say, spidey senses.
That's trademarked. You know, you can't say that.
Yeah, well, I said whose it was. Dr. Kelly. What do you mean, spidey senses? Who is there, Spider-Man? You know, it's been a great night. It's been a different night for us, and it's a subject that I've, you know, really thought about talking about for a long time, how to approach it delicately and yet with in a way that needs to be talked about. And I hope we did that. Dr. Edwards says, Vicky senses. You're fun. Thank you. It's been a great night, though. And thanks for everybody's support. You had great conversations in the chat room and supporting each other. And that's the key, supporting each other.
Absolutely, supporting each other. And you know, thank you for sharing to everybody that shared their pain. And I hope that in sharing, you found comfort, because that's what this community's for. We're a community of the curious, community of people trying to find out more about the world and taking solace with each other in life.
We
covered a lot of topics tonight in terms of this broad, big topic of death. It kind of is omnipresent, and I feel we've kind of come out better at the end.
Awesome.
And with that, we're going to have a fantastic topic for next week that I don't think we thought up yet, but it's going to be great. But I hope you join us for it. And until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.